I vow myself to this. I will become a living vessel to contain the life and essence of reality and bring it forth into form. Ernest Holmes wrote those powerful words in his epic masterpiece, The Voice Celestial. And for those that know me, they know that that is the book for me of Ernest that rocks my world. The living vessel to contain the life and essence of reality, reality with a capital R. That living vessel is, as is the title of our lesson this week, it's your personality. Your personality is that living vessel to bring forth the life and essence of reality, that divine reality, God's reality, spiritual reality, truth with a capital T. That is our joy, it is our privilege, it is our gift to be that living vessel, to be the place where God happens. We are the point, the place, where God comes to the realization as an individual and personified perfect form. It is our joy to be the place where God happens in the world. We are the face of God. We are the love of God. We are the truth of God in form. Good morning. And so as the last line of that chapter states, in such degree as we embody it, automatically it embodies us. Perfect reciprocal relationship, the law of correspondence in effect. In such degree as we embody it, automatically it embodies us. Or as Ernest used to love to say, God in me, as me, is me. God in me, as me, is me. My teacher in ministerial school, one of them was Dr. George Bindal, who was Ernest's confidant at the end of his life when Hazel died. And they used to sit around at night and watch Green Acres. And our dignified leader, our spiritual leader, and eat popcorn and have discussions about the nature of reality. And I always remember that. And one of the things that he used to say was that Ernest had hoped that we would really get this feeling of oneness deep down in our soul as he passed the popcorn bowl back and forth. And he used to say that it made him crazy that people would always say, God and I are one. He referred to that as the crazy glue prayer. God and I are one. He said we would take two separate things and then glue them back together. He said, I really want people to get God in me, as me, is me. It's a whole different shift in consciousness. And when you get that shift in consciousness, that's the personality that Ernest is referring to in this treasure chapter here. So, yes, we know that. We know that that's a spiritual truth. We know that's the essence of our being. We know because it resonates with us, it vibrates within us. Our whole being says yes when we hear that, feel that, see that, sense that, and know that. And then the question becomes, as it often is with everything that we hear as a spiritual truism, what then do we know? What then do we do with what we know? We know? What then do we do with what we know? We've studied hard for our knowledge to grow, and now we must learn to live what we know. So what do we do it? Well, it's pretty much this book. It's up to you. It's up to you. What do you want to do with that? In the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest defines our personality as the use we make of our individual divinity. The use we make of our individual divinity. And going into that chapter on page 334 in the mystics section, which is where Connie and I like to hang out, in the mystics section, he tells us, since we see that personality is what one does with his individuality, we should turn within, as have all those great souls who have blessed the world with their presence, we should turn within and find God. It should seem natural to turn to the great power back of everything. It should seem normal to believe in this power, and we should have a sense of a real presence when we do turn toward the one and only power in the universe. We should turn within and find God. Not because God was ever lost, but to come to a greater realization. It's like that joke about finding Jesus. I have to do this, sorry. They take this man who's been drunk most of his life, and he's decided that he's going to dedicate his life to religion. And so they take him down to the great river, and they baptize him, dunk his head under the water, and they bring his head up, and they say, "Sir, have you found Jesus?" And the man says, "No." So they take him back down to that river and dunk him one more time, put his head under the water, and lift him up, and they say, "Have you found Jesus now?" And he says, "No, not yet." So one more time, third time's the charge. They take him, they dunk him under the water, they bring him back up. They say, "Are you sure you haven't found Jesus?" And he says, "Are you sure this is where you lost him?" So it's a little different perspective for those of us in science of mind. It's finding God. We don't need to find God because God isn't lost. We find God because it is in our divine nature to experience and express that love that is the divine as us. So knowing that it is our privilege and our pleasure to experience that divine nature through our personality, we get to move throughout our everyday life realizing I am the place where God happens. Now for some of us that's great news. For some of us that gives us a little cause for concern. But I am the place where God happens. And so as we are driving down the road and watching other people do what they do, we can say, as my friend once said but to the person who cut him off in traffic, "Well, now there goes God. Well, now there goes God." So, our personality is the place where God happens. What a wonderful perspective in science of mind that our spirituality then finds us in human form to be a joyous thing, not a sinful thing, not an inferior thing. But it is the Creator's great privilege to reveal itself as all of creation every moment, and that includes you and me and everything that is. So we have the opportunity then to do, as this month's Science of Mind magazine says, to see with the eyes of God and to know that everything is the place that expresses the divine. And that is the truest meaning of the word oneness. That we are all here to experience and express the life, the light, the love of the divine to the highest level of our consciousness in this moment. And we are all aware of that with each other. That we are all one within this one. So why is it that we know that to be true and we can live our lives freely, consciously, and fully experiencing and expressing that divinity, then why sometimes do we get caught up in that place where we don't allow our personality to express the divine? Well, maybe it has something to do with this story by the Buddha. The Buddha gathered together his followers and told them of a man who was a young widower, and he had a young son, about 5 years old. And even then, he traveled on business, and he had to leave his son at home. Well, one time he went out and traveled on business, and while he was away, some robbers, some villains, came in to his town and killed everyone in the town and burned the town down. And when the widower came home, he looked around to where his house used to be and looked for his son and couldn't find him. And all the evidence pointed to the remains of this young child near his home, and he believed that his son had been killed. And so he took together all the remains, and he took the ashes of that and bought a beautiful velvet pouch and placed the ashes of the remains inside that velvet pouch and placed it over his heart. And wherever he went, working, sleeping, eating, he carried that velvet pouch over his heart as a symbol of his burning grief. Well, several weeks later, his young son, who was still alive, had been kidnapped by the robbers and came back home and went to the new house, found the new house where his father lived, and with great joy and love in his heart, pounded on that front door and said, "Papa, it's me. I found my way. I'm home. Let me in." Well, the father touched that pouch and thought, "I miss my son. This must be some neighborhood boy who's come to make fun of me." So he yelled at the man at the door, "Go away. Stop making fun of me." And he said, "Papa, don't you remember my voice? It's me. Let me in." And the father said, "Stop humiliating me. Go away." And that young boy banged and banged on the door, and the father never opened it. And from that moment on, father and son never saw each other again. When the Buddha finished telling the story, he said, "Somewhere, sometime, someone tells you a falsehood, and you hold it so close to your heart, you believe it is so true, that when the real truth comes at midnight and bangs on your door, you will not let it in." So in our world, in our conditioning, the world that we've co-created, we have told each other so many falsehoods. We've bought into so many illusions. We've been so conditioned to believe so many stories that we've accepted truth with a small t instead of truth with a capital T. And when that truth comes and actually knocks on our own door of our consciousness, oftentimes we don't let it in. So don't buy into the story. Don't accept the truth with a small t. Live your life so that truth with a capital T can find entrance into your consciousness. So we know that our personality is an expression of the divine. That's truth with a capital T. But perhaps at some point in our life we were handed a medical diagnosis. Maybe we've been told that we have cancer. And so we were told that we would never survive. And so we've bought into that story of truth with a small t. And we've let that run our life. Or maybe we've been in a relationship that didn't work out and we were told that we were not worthy of love. And we've bought into that story, the small t version of life instead of the capital T. We have the privilege and the joy to let the story go. So if there are any stories that we have bought into in our life, our finances, our relationships, our health, our homes, our culture, our government, our politics, all of the things that limit and inhibit us because we've believed somehow that our life is separate from the divine life. There's the human life on one hand and there's the divine life, and they don't coexist. They are not the same thing. We have an opportunity then to say, "I no longer accept that as my truth. I'm moving on up to reality with a capital R and truth with a capital T." Moving on up and allowing the divine then to so purposefully, so lovingly, so honestly, and so truthfully live in, through, and as each and every one of us. We make the shift to realizing that our personality is that place where the divine is happening, and we can live life with a capital T for truth. So then we allow the divine to live within us. Let us use that personality, our divine personality, to be used consciously. First of all, consciously. And in this chapter on your personality, when they talk about how to use our personality and how to use it consciously, he says, if a practitioner thinks he has to create a life force by his thought, he is wasting time. If, on the other hand, he knows that the creative force is, and his thought merely differentiates it, he practices scientifically and effectively. So let us use our life, our personality, consciously, honestly, and responsibly to allow truth with a capital T to be called forth. In this section, we don't have to make the creative force happen. It already is. Life already is. So we don't have to make good happen in our life. We just get to make it welcome. We get to make it welcome. So consciously, can we make all good welcome through this vehicle, this living vessel that we call our personality? What would our life look like if we used the truth consciously at all times? So look for what we call the teachable moments. As we get more and more spiritual, we have a tendency to think that suddenly our life is just going to all even out and everything's going to be just so smooth and happy. And we have this great S on our chest that says, spiritual person. I am spiritual woman. I am spiritual man. Hear me roar. But really, isn't it about living consciously in this present moment? Every moment has an opportunity to teach us, to show us a greater truth and a greater experience of that truth. So are we showing up to be present to that which is, counting it all good, calling it all joy, being present to the divine in this moment? That's conscious use of truth. Unity minister named Wendy Craig Purcell talks about one of the great teachable moments with her children. And children are a wonderful place to see if you're really connected to that which is, or if you're just or if you're just telling a great story. Kids know. They have the meter that knows. So she decided to show her children in a powerful way what it is to live as that place of God at all times. Kids often feel a sense of entitlement, that everything exists for them. Good morning. Next door, the other way. And so working with many different programs for peace and nonviolence, she wanted to show them how we are all one. And so she began presenting cuisine from around the world to say, this is what this country sits down to eat every night. And so once a week it would be the place, the dinner table would be the place where people would experience what other countries and cultures went through. This is how they eat, this is where they eat, this is what they eat. And so it would be the teaching moment to show the oneness of the world. And her kids would look forward to dinner, and they would have some nights just a simple bowl of rice. You know, 2/3 of the world eats rice every night. Let's join with them. And then they would discuss what they wear, and did they go to school, and did they have pencils, and did they have shoes. And it opened up to be a great experience for all of them to feel a connection with each other. So to be present to the truth consciously, fully, and freely. How to use this personality to experience and express the divine. Let us use it consciously. Let us also use it joyously. If your religion, your spirituality, your path, whatever it is, your faith, doesn't bring out joy, what is it being used for? If you're not as happy as your dog, really? What's your path? We were in study group last week, and we laugh a lot. We laugh a lot in study group, don't we? We laugh a lot. And someone said, I was in a study group last week, and I realized that after 2 hours, no one had laughed once. And I said, what was it a class on? Spiritual constipation? They didn't have an opportunity to laugh. So let us use it joyously. The old expression says, religion is something not to be studied, but to be danced. To be danced. And when The Heart Waits by Wayne Muller, he said, let us shift the emphasis from our endless pursuit of spiritual knowledge back to the dimension of living our religion in such a way that it becomes a dance, a celebration. And from your personality, Ernest refers to this towards the end of the chapter when he says, the only way we can ever use spiritual power is by a conscious sense of unity. There is one creativeness in the universe. We did not put it there, and God himself did not put it there. It is God, and God did not make God. It is individualized in each one of us. The way we use it manifests as our personality, our charm, our attractiveness, the visible evidence of our invisible subjective individualization of this universal creativeness acting as law and order. Therefore, when we are attuned to that inner creativeness, we are consciously communicating with God. When we are attuned to that inner creativeness, we are consciously communicating with God. And God is consciously communicating with us. So that reciprocal relationship, let it be a place of joy. Let it be a place of love. Let it be a place of happiness. How often do we think that God is communicating with us and that it is God's joy to express as us? That God has fun being us. Some people, God must be saying, what a trip. I've never had the opportunity to express as that. Some of us are unique and some of us are unique. But let it be a place of joy. When I was in ministerial school again with someone, and we were getting together for a retreat, and her husband said, oh, here go these two minister types, and they're going off to have a retreat. They're going to go and pray and meditate and sit someplace very quietly and express God. And she said to me, he's never been in Science of Mind. And so we went off and got a hotel room and ate pizza and Ben and Jerry's ice cream for an entire weekend and laughed and sang and danced and came back totally refreshed. And he said, how was your retreat? And she said, oh, it was very good, very sacred, very serious. And she sent me a letter, came in the mail a couple of weeks later. And it was from the Chunky Monkey Retreat Center. Because we had spent the entire weekend eating Chunky Monkey ice cream from Ben and Jerry's. So she said, and here's two pizza prayers and levitating beds and the boogie-woogie dance of God.
Yay.
So how to use it? Let it use us. Let it use our personality joyfully, joyously. And let it use our personality to bring out the best in us, to bring out the best in our humanity, to be fully present when that personality of God comes and cuts us off in traffic, to be fully aware, to let it bring out the best in our personality. Wayne Muller, again from When the Heart Waits, says, the spiritual life doesn't divorce us from our humanity. It causes us to embrace it. It makes us more human. Genuine transformation always connects us to our essential nature, both the sacred and the ordinary. When we go through its passages, we plumb the depths of our humanity. So it makes us more human, not less. It's the sacred and the outrageous. It's the sacred outrageous of us.
Yes.
So haven't you found that as we get older and wiser and been around for a long, long time, bought the CD, bought the t-shirt, read the book, been to the seminar, done all of that, that we have a greater appreciation of life's ironies, its paradoxes, its metaphors, its ridiculous moments, that our spiritual path becomes richer and deeper, that we become that vessel in such a way that the whole world then can sit on our doorstep and find sanctuary with us. That we can be present to whatever it is that's right in front of us and say, yeah, this is how God has shown up today. That there's a richness and a depth to us as we move along that wasn't there. And that doesn't come from studying the textbook or studying this book or sitting and listening in the seminar. It's learning to listen to that voice of the divine. And to know that we have a way of expressing it that no one else does. And that we are not rattled by what shows up in our life. We are not moved. We are not perturbed. We were talking last night about angels and how the fact that we can be present to whatever that spiritual experience is and have the love and the patience and the wisdom to say, yeah, I know what you mean. I feel that too. That our personality gets clearer. We become more transparent for God. We become radiant with God. We become more joyous with God. That there's within us, within our own soul, such a sense of oneness that every breath is precious, every thought is precious, every emotion is precious. In such degree as we embody it, automatically it embodies us. In the beginning, Ernest wrote, "There is a power for good in the universe greater than you are, and you can use it." But it takes decades of practice to know that when we are ready, it uses us. It uses us. And when we do, we know that all that there is love. All that there is love. So it's up to us. We are the people. Now is the time. This is the place. And there's nothing else but God. And so it is.
And so it is.
Thank you.